The Tom Woods Show, episode 1008, bonus episode.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. For those of you interested, I'm sharing today an interview I did on another podcast, Catholic Book Radio, with my friend Roger McCaffrey, who's been a guest on this show several times and whom I've known for a long time indeed. And we talk about one of my books called Sacred Then and Sacred Now, The Return of the Old Latin Mass. And I've had some people who've had some interest in this. So I thought, what the heck? That's what bonus episodes are for. So I'm putting this one in here. If you're not interested in this, then just wait till Monday and there'll be more episodes. Or you could always go, by the way, to tomwoods.com/episodes and just start from the beginning. You got so many to go through. Anyway, we're talking about this book today and the general subject and in this podcast episode that I'm sharing with you. Now, bear in mind, this was done very, very informally. We weren't using a pop filter for my mic. So I feel like you really should be sitting down at a table with the mic set up with the pop filter so that you don't get the occasional explosion sound, like when you use the letter P or the letter B or whatever. But anyway, I hope you can overlook that. Just to set the stage for this, for people who may not know the background, the conversation has to do with the following. The Second Vatican Council, which was an ecumenical council of the church held from 1962 to 65, released a document relating to liturgical reform and recommended liturgical reform. As with many of the documents of Vatican II, people on the left and people on the right can pull out parts they like and claim that they have correctly understood the document, and at the end, everybody just winds up arguing with each other. So, as in this document, there is plenty of call for the retention of traditional practices. So, Gregorian chant should be given pride of place, and so on and on. But there are always these time bombs in the document, like, for example, all other things equal, Gregorian chant should be given pride of place. Well, as in practice, it turns out all other things are never equal, so nobody going to a Catholic church today is ever going to hear Gregorian chant. So that was, in practice, what wound up happening. But the idea was we got to make the Mass more accessible for modern man, was the implication. Now, if that really had been the primary motivation, which may have been among some people who didn't know any better, that may have been their motivation, all you had to do was translate the old Mass into English. That would have solved that problem. But the fact that they wanted to introduce a whole bunch of new prayers, and I think it's quite clear that when you look at these new prayers, you compare them to the old ones, the emphasis on the Catholic teaching on the Mass is much, much less evident and clear in the new prayers. And this seems to have occurred systematically. And I could take some time and point out a lot of these examples, but I think that would get tedious. But that was one thing. The other thing was that the new form of Mass just lent itself to more improvisation and less formality, you know. So that's, of course, led to all kinds of problems in the typical parish. But anyway, in my view, this decision was completely catastrophic, and it, I think, played a substantial role in undermining all kinds of good things and causing all kinds of problems. So, as of 1970, you had this new liturgy, and the old one was really not allowed anymore all of a sudden. It was just not allowed. And there were minor exceptions made, as we talk about the indult for England and Wales we talk about in this interview. But really, there was no movement on this until Pope John Paul II, who frankly was not that interested in liturgy. It's kind of strange that you'd be a Catholic priest, bishop, cardinal, and pope, and really not be interested in liturgy, but it was not his primary concern. I mean, he was interested in moral theology and topics like that. So anyway, though, John Paul saw that there was still a very intense desire on the part of some people just to have the old liturgy back that they had worshipped by for a long time. And so the indult of 1984 and then expanded in 1988 was issued, whereby, with the bishop's permission, you could have the old Mass. But these bishops had, their careers were all tied up in Vatican II, and they viewed the desire for the old Mass as a slap in the face, so many of them were not forthcoming or especially generous with this. So finally, in 2007, Pope Benedict XVI issued his motu proprio, which means issued of his own accord, Summorum Pontificum, which declared you don't need the bishop's permission anymore. This whole thing is ridiculous. Obviously, if this is something sacred and it was sacred for our ancestors, it's sacred for us now. And it's ridiculous that anybody should be held in suspicion for wanting to have what we ourselves told them was the holiest possession in our arsenal. So, of course, anybody without needing any permission can go ahead and do this. And so, anyway, that's the real skeleton outline. And so Roger and I have a conversation about that, and it revolves a bit around my book. Now, we did this. Roger was visiting us here in Florida, so it's done, you know, in a living room, you know, under not professional conditions. But nevertheless, I hope you enjoy it. And if you don't, there's always next week. Here we go.
From New York and Rome, Catholic Book Radio, with your host, Roger McCaffrey.
The book is sacred then and sacred now. It's written by Tom Woods, in whose living room we are taping this program. This is awesome, Tom.
I appreciate your willingness to do this on location, so to speak, here in Florida. You're home for a while, right? And then
And then we fled back to Connecticut. We're the only people in Naples, Florida, since the year 2000 who moved back to Connecticut. I think we could probably take the prize on that. And many people would suggest some counseling is needed for us.
So
me and my family.
You know, Roger, I was actually about to jump into interviewing mode because I have so many podcast episodes of my own. I was about to start asking you about the old mass.
Well, let's make it clear here that this is my show. Yeah.
You ask the questions, I answer.
It's your equipment. It's your kids in the background who are probably going to be making noise in about 5 minutes.
But that's just, it adds a level of realism to the show.
Authenticity. That's what we're all about. Yeah. You and I, we go back 26 or 27 years for listeners who are too young to remember. So
that's ridiculous, isn't it?
It's a little bit troubling to me. I'm actually troubled. But the book, what's the full title? It's our book. But
yeah, it's called Sacred Then and Sacred Now, The Return of the Old Latin Mass.
And we published it at Roman Catholic Books, where it is still available. You can't get it on Amazon. You can get it from Tom's conglomerate, or you can buy it from booksforcatholics.com at approximately 15 bucks. But it's not available on Amazon. Don't ask me why. That's not our fault. That's Amazon's fault. But they list it as out of stock. So as a result, my understanding is that if you try to buy it used, you pay $89,000.
It's something like $89,000. So that copy is, there's got to be something super special about it. I don't know what people have been doing to them. But
I mean, it's outrageous. But
it means I sell a lot of them through my website because people get desperate. They got to have one. And they find out that my website sells.
I'm delighted with that. But we still have 300 or 400
yeah,
copies.
Yeah, yeah, go to booksforcatholics.com. Don't order them from me.
Booksforcatholics.com. Now, you did, I think you sent me an autographed copy of this book, but I was a little disappointed because it said something like, even though I've known you for 27 years, I think you signed it over to Roger McCaffrey with warm regards.
I think by the time I was done with this thing, it was probably the third or fourth book I had written in two or three years. I was all mentally spent. You know, I can give you a nice fresh dedication now.
Oh, I'll take it. But I didn't bring it with me. But so we'll talk about the book in a second. But I wanted to get the pricing out of the way and how people can order it. So it's about $15. Or $15.95. I think we probably have a sale price on it, but and I hope you're not trying to underprice us, but maybe you are.
No.
Well, the thing this is appropriate because we're taping days before the 10th anniversary celebration of Summorum Pontificum, which was Pope Benedict the 16th's document liberating completely the traditional Latin Mass from church law restrictions, really. I mean, it was a restricted liturgy, having been the traditional mass for the church for 1,500 or so years. It was restricted suddenly and arbitrarily by Pope Paul VI. And over the ensuing 30 years or so, 40 years, became a point of contention, whereas before it was a point of unity. So that's why you did the book. And it's all positive, the book, I might add.
Yeah.
But you
very unusual for a McCaffrey imprint.
Well, you know, it was your positivity that prevailed. I wanted some negativity in it.
Well, there's some implied negativity, but the gist of it was, when this announcement was made, we wanted there to be an easy way for Catholic laity, and presumably priests as well, to become familiar with the old liturgy quickly. And secondly, to make sure they didn't bring with them some of the bad habits that a lot of Catholic parishes have gotten into. To just say that, and by the way, I'm being extremely charitable in calling them bad habits, but there are certain practices that are so foreign to the old liturgy, and we wanted to make sure they don't slip in and create some kind of a hybrid. So that was the book is organized like the first chapter is why Benedict did this. And I went through and looked at a lot of his published writings and speaking on the subject to explain the positive reasons he gave for doing this. It was not to satisfy old fogies who can't keep with the times. He could not have been clearer about that. Then I do kind of a walkthrough of the old mass, because I try to think about, as I experienced it for the first time in 1995 as a graduate student, I didn't know how to keep up with the missal. I didn't understand that I'm hearing some singing, some chanting going on, but that the priest is going on with prayers further into the missal at that point. So I couldn't keep up. So I explained to people all the things that I had trouble getting on my own. So I walk them through. I give them some of the explanations for why certain things are done. The one thing about the Latin Mass of the Roman Rite is that there's nothing superfluous in it. There's nothing that's just this was a point that my friend Michael Foley at Baylor University makes. There's nothing that's purely ritualistic. Like even the washing of hands initially had a practical purpose. So anyway, I go through and try to explain what these sorts of things are. And then the rest of it is looking at things like frequently asked questions. Why does the priest face, you know, the altar, questions like that, why Latin and not the vernacular? And then there's a chapter on, here are things we don't do. We don't do communion in the hand. We don't do, Eucharistic ministers, so-called, and going through and explaining these sorts of things. And then appendices include the document itself, the accompanying letter to the bishops, which was also great, and the sermon that was delivered by on EWTN, when they had their first mass in the old rite, probably ever since the announcement by Pope Benedict. It was by that fraternity priest. I can't remember his name now.
Calvin Goodwin?
Yes, Father Goodwin's sermon. It was It was so beautifully done. It was so suited to that audience. It was a way that challenged and appealed to them without rubbing anything in their faces.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, the mass shouldn't be a point of division, anyway. So, I mean, I have no problem with positive books on the mass.
Yeah, no, I'm just.
But it's counterproductive, really, to turn it into a piece of polemics. But it wasn't the fault of people who loved the old mass that things happened the way they did once the new was introduced. So I even credit myself with blamelessness on this topic, even though I've, you know, published people who promote the traditional Latin liturgy. We didn't invent the new one. And it was Pope Benedict who referred to it once as the new rite as a, quote, manufactured liturgy, which in his mind meant that there was something inauthentic about it. The word manufactured and liturgy are oxymoronic. So
yeah.
That was his critique, not any traditionalist. There goes the thunder in the background. That makes us four programs in a row, three with Father Gerald Murray, Catholic Book Radio programs. That's what this is, where we had thunder going in the background. So I'm gonna, maybe we should do another one right after this just to make it
five.
Go for the world record.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so the fact that it's polemics, that polemics are involved now in the discussion of the Mass is not the fault of traditionalists. Some of them might have, might be accused of artlessness in dealing with the question, but it's not their fault.
Yeah, of course, it was imposed, the new, in a way that was almost Orwellian. That
right.
Overnight, you would be told that just 10 minutes ago, we had in our arsenal all the arguments that we would use in favor of why we use the Latin language, why we have the postures that we have, why we have the prayers that we have, why the Mass is not just arbitrarily edited all of a sudden by a committee. We had all our answers for that, and then all of a sudden, all those are wrong. Those answers are now wrong, and now the opposite of those answers is true, and anybody who thinks there's anything wrong with this is probably mentally deranged. And on the fourth, the fourth Sunday of the, fifth month of the, every third year, you can have a Mass at 3:30 p.m. for these old fogies, was the original arrangement.
Well, if you're in London.
Yeah, that was it. It was an indult for England and Wales.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So that was the generosity.
If you happen to be in Wales, why you can certainly, the church in its beneficence decreed that if you happen to be in Wales, you can go to a traditional Latin Mass. All that changed slowly under John Paul II, and then Benedict XVI accelerated and changed, really radically changed the situation by decreeing in canon law that the two liturgies, the new rite and the old rite, are equivalents. That was the revolution of Pope Benedict XVI. All he was doing was uttering a simple truth that these two rites are equivalents, and one can't be discriminated against.
And in fact, we don't necessarily want to get into super technical details, but there was an argument that so-called conservative Catholics, this is the term we would use for people who accepted and were at peace with or professed to be at peace with the new liturgy. They just wanted it to be done correctly and all that. They would lecture us and say the old Mass has been officially abrogated. So there is no legal ground for clinging to it. It's been abrogated. I'm pretty sure that was the argument in the book, The Pope, the Council, and the Mass by James Lacutus. And then that argument was thrown at us, and we had responses to that. But that argument has now been definitively exploded because Benedict XVI came right out and said it was never abrogated.
That's a direct quote from Summorum Pontificum. And the traditional liturgy, quote, was never abrogated, unquote.
Yeah, so that
takes care of that. That was the central argument.
Unless you're going to reduce yourself to it depends on what he means by never.
Right.
Otherwise,
is there an "is" in there that they
exactly.
can debate?
So otherwise, well, the argument is over.
But that book is still published as if it's the last word on the new rite and understanding the new rite of Mass. But and it contains that central fallacy that the old rite. I guess they must. Surely they expunged that sentence from the latest printings. I hope
you would think they'd have to.
But already we're probably getting obscure for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we got to stick to it. I mean, basically the gist of it is that for the average Catholic in the pew, his experience of what the Mass is changed very dramatically. And moreover, what he was told the Mass was all about changed. What was meant by active participation was outward physical piety, that participation meant singing and saying things, and whereas normally we had thought of participation in the Mass as being fundamentally interior. And moreover, now this I can't prove, Roger, but I have a theory about it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but in the old liturgy, if you're late to Mass but you're there before the offertory, it's considered legitimate. It's considered
right.
you've satisfied your obligation.
Yes.
But in the new Mass, you have to be there before the gospel. And part of me thought, wow, that's actually an area where they got tougher. And then I realized, wait a minute, it's not so much they've gotten tougher. It's that they've redefined what the Mass is all about. They think of the Mass as being didactic fundamentally, that you're there to learn about the Bible.
Right.
And that the preacher, that the word as opposed to the sacrament is, it becomes more central. Now, this could be a little bit technical, but the point is that it's ever so slightly, it shows there is a kind of less of an emphasis on the sacrifice of the Mass as being the central aspect of
right.
the ritual.
I think that's fair to say. On the other hand, by the mid 21st century, now we're sort of early to mid 21st, early 21st century. They're just happy you show up for Mass. They couldn't care if you should just park in the parking lot. They're delighted, and so that probably qualifies. And to most Catholic priests who are confessors, you try to confess that you were 3.5 seconds late for your official Mass, and they'd laugh at you. Don't you think? They just want to know if you're in the, were you in the parking lot by the time the gospel started?
Maybe so.
I mean, it's pretty bad. Yeah. And under Pope Francis, he brushes aside all technical questions. So, you know, technical questions that have to do with grave sin, they really annoy him. So if you went to Pope Francis and said, "Your Holiness, I was late for Mass. I arrived, at the sermon instead of before the gospel." He'd probably throw you out of his confessional. I don't know.
Can't say. Don't know.
Well, anyway, Francis now has begun to attack the motivation of people who prefer the Latin Mass.
Yeah,
Pope Francis is now basically beginning to eat away at the foundation of his predecessor's very important liturgical document, Summorum Pontificum, which is, again, summarized in your book. Don't you see that happening?
Oh, yeah, because there it's made clear the inherent merits of this liturgy, that it's abnormal to think that we would suddenly not be devoted to it, that that's abnormal. That it was wrong to expect people to behave that way. This is something that's sacred and hallowed by tradition. What would be wrong with you to think? I mean, even bear in mind, there was even that famous Agatha Christie indult petition, as you recall, where a whole bunch of people signed a petition, not all of whom were Catholic, saying to Paul VI, "Look, we all know that technically, in the abstract, you have the right to pull down all the cathedrals of Europe, but we would also tell you you were a monster and a vandal if you did that. Well, likewise, we feel that liturgically you've done the same thing, and surely you've got to keep the old Mass." So, I mean, in other words, even on just a human level, you can appreciate the value of it. But also, Pope Benedict pointed out that the younger folks were also finding great value in it, great spiritual meaning in it. And so this was not just something trivial, but it was something profoundly significant. Whereas for Pope Francis, the suggestion is this is some kind of a fad, or it's a cultural thing or whatever. So he is so at pains to try to understand the motivations of everybody else in the world, right? I mean, to try to understand the motivations of whether it's people of other faiths or no faith at all, or all kinds of different traditions. He tries to understand them, but his own people, he could not understand on this.
No. In fact, he forbade, as one of his, it was probably his first liturgical act as Pope, he forbade the use of the traditional Latin liturgy among some 25 to 30 priests of the Franciscans of Mary Immaculate. He personally signed that decree. I don't think a lot of people realize that, which removes a right that they had under Summorum Pontificum. Summorum Pontificum guarantees the right of every priest to use the old missal. And that right was removed by Pope Francis in the case of these 25 priests of the Franciscan order, all of whom have left the order as a result. So anyway, my point is a war is coming. I guess the war that we thought was over with Summorum Pontificum has been restarted.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a separate issue. And again, it's not dealt with in your book, which is, let's stay on the book itself, but I think the book is something people need to have if they're interested in the liturgy and in the controversy that preceded Summorum Pontificum, or that's coming, triggered this time again by Pope Francis, who's a church liberal. I mean, that much we can say. And your book, you know, it can't be forgotten because it summarizes the case for the old mass made by Pope Benedict.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's still alive, by the way, although we're not supposed to call him Pope Benedict. He's still seen regularly in his white cassock.
Yeah, there's something very weird about that.
Maybe we should do a whole show on that.
Yeah, I don't know what I would say, except
I have a few cracks I can make, but I don't want to be
sure we could
irreverent.
They could be sometimes when we have something that doesn't quite fit into our episode of the Contra Krugman podcast, we just sneak it in at the end as a little bonus for people. After the closing music, it's in there. So you can always do that.
Well, we'll do another show on it, perhaps, because I have to talk to you about other matters.
Well, let me just say quickly about the book. I was really happy that the reviews it got were really strong. And I even had people like real liturgical scholars saying, yeah, this is a good, really good introduction to it. And I thought, well, this is something I pursued as an avocation. I'm not a liturgist, thank heavens, by profession. I'm just really interested in this. And to have been able to write this as a spare time project and have it be received pretty well by a lot of fairly respected outlets was a nice bonus. Even Publishers Weekly said something nice about it, if I recall correctly.
Right. Yeah, I think you're
right. Publishers Weekly doesn't normally go for Wood's material.
Right. Well, you're the only guy I've ever talked to who's been condemned on the editorial page of the New York Times, which you have.
Yeah. That was, in retrospect, turned out to be a truly glorious thing. At the time, as a young scholar, I was pretty terrified. But as I look back on it, I think, yeah, I got some serious street cred.
That's a distinction.
Yeah.
Really?
It sure is.
For a non-politician to be condemned on the editorial page of the Times.
Now, you were criticized in the Times by Cardinal O'Connor, but not on the editorial
page. And he didn't use my name.
Oh, that's true. But you wrote to him anyway because you knew he was talking about you.
Right. It was the whole thing was so pitiful. I don't even want to go into it. But it was a political thing. He was being a pure politician. It had to do with the old mass and St. Patrick's.
Right.
I was misquoted in the Times. We won't even. I was actually misquoted. So, but you know, those were my glory days. But they were not that glorious because he wouldn't use my name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But these days, though, they're coming at. These days, the left is coming after you. They want it. They're going to publish your name, your address, your phone number, your employer. They are ready.
Right, because they understand that that's a prerequisite for doing permanent harm to people that they hate.
Yeah. That's why I work for myself. Doesn't matter. Say anything you want. I still bring in money by the boatload.
Right.
Jerks. Right. Sorry. I just say that because it drives them crazy.
Well, as long as people are not sending you money for the book Sacred Then and Sacred Now, but rather are ordering it
from booksforcatholics.com,
I'm okay with your private enterprise. But it's true. They can buy the book from you.
They can, but now that I hear you guys,
I wish them well.
But look, if they're at booksforcatholics.com, I'm sure they will also find many other fine titles they would want to add to their order.
And hopefully they'll all be in stock. That's a little problem we're having. We're reducing inventory. So not all of our great books are presently stocked. They're supposed to be told on the website if the book is out of stock, but we're running out of several titles. So please don't order, for example, The Physical Phenomena of Mysticism, my dear customers. But, okay, so anything else about Sacred Then and Sacred Now that we need to touch on before I wrap this up? Who blurbed it on the back? Neither one of us has a copy in front of us, but we got...
I remember the old editor of Homiletic and Pastoral Review.
Oh, Father Kenneth Baker.
Father Baker.
The great Jesuit.
Great Jesuit, super smart.
Still going strong.
Is he really?
He's out in Seattle. Yeah.
That's nice. Then Alcuin Reed, the Benedictine.
Another excellent liturgist.
Who knows way, way, way more about the Mass than I do. And He said really nice things about it. I think George Neumeier may even be on the back, and I just interviewed him on my show.
You did? Yeah, I heard
Brian
that.
Brian St. Paul, who used to be with Crisis. But I had a whole bunch. I got a whole bunch of really nice reviews. And I said even Publishers Weekly.
Yeah, PW ran a little notice about it.
Yeah.
So they had not seen the New York Times about you because they would never have
done that. Touch me with a 10-foot pole.
Anyway, thanks for doing this show.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. That is the bonus episode for today. I don't know what's coming next week. Man, I have got insanely busy days coming up for the next few weeks with the cruise coming up, the 35th anniversary of the Mises Institute coming up, the 1,000th episode coming up. This very weekend, September 23rd, I'm speaking in Melbourne, Florida. So it's a busy, busy, busy time. So who knows what's coming next week, but something will be there. And I hope you'll join me for whatever that is. See you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.